The Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Smith, Judge Ross, Judge Connolly, the Honorable Tracy M. Smith presiding.
Good morning, counsel, and welcome to Minnesota Court of Appeals. Our first case this morning is A20-1329, Terry Smeeby, respondent versus Janet Hansen et al. Appellants. Each of you, counsel, will have 15 minutes for your primary argument. Counsel for appellant, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. When each of you starts your initial argument, if you could just state your name and a party you represent for the record. This Zoom oral argument is being recorded for purposes of having an audio recording later, which are we post those on our website. Okay, so we are ready for you, counsel for appellants.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court, Sean Foss on behalf of the appellates, Janet and Ronald Hansen. Your Honors, we are appealing from a district court decision granting summary judgment in favor of the respondent, Terry Smeeby, on his claim to quiet title over a piece of disputed property in Cormorant Township, Becker County. We are asking this court to reverse the entry of summary judgment and remand this matter to the district court with directions to enter judgment, quieting title in favor of the Hansens. This court should take that course of action because Cormorant Township, where the disputed property is located, had the authority to vacate a dedicated township road. Cormorant Township did, in fact, take that step to vacate the road. Upon vacation, the road reverted back to the original grantors of the road, the Nesses. The Nesses then implicitly included the area of the vacated road in a subsequent transfer to the Thomases.
So let's pause there, counsel, if I may. And then it ends up in your client's hands. But I'm sorry to interrupt before the end of your litany there. But here's what I'm trying to understand. I'm not quite sure I understand why vacating the road advances your argument that the disputed property transferred to the next successor in issue from the Nesses. And so let me explain why, and then you explain why you think I'm wrong. So as I understand your argument, the township vacated the road and then lost, there was no, in the 1960s, maybe 1967, whenever it was prior to the Nesses' original conveyance of the road, initial conveyance of the road, or excuse me, of the disputed property to the Thomases, right?
Yes.
So if the road was vacated by the township with the authority of the township. They had authority to do it and then no longer had prerogative to put a road there. And it was then a Nesses property. Why would there be any implicit sort of abutting a road-based presumption that takes a disputed property and conveys it implicitly to the Thomases? Why wouldn't whatever transfer of property happens then be just simply whatever is described in the conveyance document? It seems to me that vacating the road hurts your claim instead of helps it.
Well, Your Honor, I appreciate the question. I think the answer is that it was transferred as a matter of law.
But the law is that if it's property abutting a road, but if the road is gone, even the prerogative to build a road, why does that presumption arise at all?
The presumption arises under Section 507.17. The Minnesota Supreme Court, in their decision White versus Jefferson back in 1910, announced the presumption that when property is transferred abutting a roadway, any interest of the owner in the roadway is included in that transfer implicitly, unless it's explicitly excluded or there's evidence that there was a contrary intention.
Did White involve a road that had already been vacated by the time of the conveyance at issue?
It did not. And so White actually specifically said that rule of law would not apply to a vacated road because along the lines of your question, there may be reason to treat a vacated road differently. However, after White, the White decision, the Minnesota legislature enacted Section 507.17, which explicitly extended that rule of law to vacated roadways and said, if there is a property that is transferred adjacent to a vacated roadway, the vacated roadway is implicitly transferred as well. And that statute was enacted before the Nesses dedicated the plat that's at issue before Cormoran Township vacated it. And so truly, Your Honor, I believe as a matter of law, the presumption arises that the transfer from the Nesses to the Thomases would implicitly include. And so we believe that because of the vacation and the application of Section 507.17, the district court erroneously concluded that the property was not included in the transfer from the Nesses to the Thomases, and the district court found that my clients, the Hansons, were not part of the chain of title. And so
So then the question is whether that presumption is overcome by an explicit or explicitly. Can you speak to that?
Certainly, Your Honor. The district court did not reach that issue because it found the road had not been properly vacated. And so you are correct that that would be a finding of fact in terms of was there, there's no evidence of explicitly excluding it from the transfer from the Nesses to the Thomases. The deed does not exclusively exclude the vacated roadway. The respondent, Mr. Smaby, could make the argument that that was the intention, but the parties would then need the opportunity to submit evidence regarding what the intention of the Nesses was and the Thomases at the time of that transfer back in 1967. And because the district court granted summary judgment in part based upon the conclusion that there was no proper vacation, the parties never reached that issue. Though, as I indicated, we did present the actual deed, which does not exclude the vacated roadway.
Go ahead.
I had a separate line of questioning, so go ahead with yours.
Oh, I just want to make sure then. So an alternative, if we were to decide differently on from the district court on the roadway, you think there's something triable on the issue of what the conveyance meant?
We don't, Your Honor. We believe that, to take a step all the way back, Mr. Smaby's original claim alleged that the road had been vacated, but he argued that he had a chain of title from the vacated road. When he evidently made the determination that that was no longer the legal consequence, at the time he filed a motion for summary judgment, he now argued that the road had not been vacated and they were the proper owners because it had not been vacated. We believe that the evidence of the deed, the 1967 deed between the Nesses and the Thomases, is undisputed and it does not exclude the vacated roadway. And so under the presumption of law, that roadway would be included. That evidence is undisputed at this point in time. What I was saying is that if the court did remand it, that would be a fact issue that could be addressed that the district court did not address because it ruled that the vacation itself was not properly done. So it didn't reach the implicit transfer of the roadway from the Nesses to the Thomases.
Thanks.
Can you address the contention that all that was available to be vacated in 1967 was a hypothetical road that wouldn't be covered by the township's authority to vacate, since the road was never opened and as you in your brief acknowledge?
Certainly, Your Honor. You are correct. The road was never opened, but there is a legal distinction between acceptance of the road and opening the road. Acceptance of the road occurred when the Becker County Commission passed a resolution accepting the plat, and that plat was recorded with the Becker County Recorder. Upon those acts, the road had been accepted whether or not it was open. And once the road was accepted, it needed to be vacated as a matter of law, or it could be vacated as a matter of law by Cormoran Township under Section 164.07. So we don't believe there's any legal significance to the fact that the road itself was never actually opened or actively used during the short period of time between the plat in 1964 and Cormoran Township's vacation of the road in 1967.
The reason this seems so strange to me, and I appreciate that you're looking at 0.17, it says a vacated street. And I think this sort of gets to the question, I think, that Judge Ross is also talking about is a vacated potential street that was never created. I mean, the Nesses could have turned it into a garden, et cetera. It's hard to understand why there would be any presumption that then follows that garden into the next owner. Like, I understand maybe an actual vacated road, because maybe if there was a road there, there was, you know, the ownership issues around roads, so we don't have stray pieces of the property, et cetera. I mean, it's hard to understand a policy reason why vacated street would include a vacated potential street that never occurred or was created. It's hard to understand why any presumption should even apply to that if the seller doesn't include it in the description of what they're selling.
Thank you, Your Honor. I believe there are two answers that at least I can offer to that. The first is the easiest. That's what the legislature decided in their wisdom. And so regardless of the underlying reason, if the application of Section 507.17 is clear that a transfer of a property abutting a vacated road presumptively includes the roadway, that's what should have been applied by the district court, regardless of whether the district court, you, myself, agree with that underlying theory. Beyond that, Your Honor, the White versus Jefferson case I mentioned earlier from 1910 talks about the problems when there are transfers of parcels that are adjacent to roadways. And if it's not implicitly included, that whatever interest is in the roadway. Obviously, the legislature concluded that that interest also applied to vacated roadways in order to try to keep as clear of chain of title as possible. The case here actually presents an example of why it is confusing. So the Ness deed to the Thomases does not explicitly include the vacated roadway, and it does not exclude the roadway. That deed actually refers to the vacated roadway. It is a transfer parcel in reference to the roadway. When Mr. Smaby obtained his interest in the property via a deed from the personal representative of the Ness estate in 2019, it was in reference to the vacated roadway. The plat itself has never been amended to my knowledge. So the plat itself still shows that there would be a theoretical roadway there. And the decision, the public policy decision made by the Supreme Court in White versus Jefferson and then extended by the legislature in 507.17 is that it is better to implicitly include vacated roadways along with any interest in underlying actual roadways as part of those transfers, I presume for purposes of keeping title as clear as possible.
Couldn't one read that 0.17 though as saying every conveyance which abuts a vacated street shall be construed to include that part of the street which attaches upon such vacation, like that phrase attaches thereto upon such vacation. I mean, it sort of assumes that a conveyance happens. I mean, one could argue, and then a vacation happens after the conveyance.
Well, Your Honor,
but you're having the vacation occur before the conveyance.
Yes, Your Honor. And if you review the Edgewater Cottage Association versus Watson case from the Minnesota Court of Appeals in 1986, that addresses what happens when a road is vacated and the roadway presumptively goes back to the original grantors of the roadway, if they still own the adjacent property, or the grantees of the adjacent property. And so the case law is clear that in order to, again, connect the roadway, once it's been vacated, to an adjacent property owner, there are presumptions of law in place. Whether the vacation happens at the time the original grantor still owns the property, or whether it occurs after the grantor has transferred the property, in which case the vacated road would presumptively go back to the grantees. And so in applying that Edgewater Cottage Association case, there's not a legal distinction between the fact that the Nesses still own the property at the time it was vacated, or had they already transferred their interest to the Thomases. The Thomases would have then been the beneficiaries who would have implicitly received the vacated roadway. As my time is running short, I want to touch on two other topics.
One quick question before you leap to the next. I do know your time is running short, but it's a quick one. Assuming that we agree only with the argument you've just presented and with none of the other theories, why wouldn't a remand be the appropriate remedy in order to deal with the presumption that the district court didn't address?
I believe a remand ultimately is the appropriate. again, the undisputed evidence in the record indicates there's no exclusion of the vacated roadway and the transfer from the Nesses to the Thomases. And so as part of our response to the summary judgment motion, we did ask for summary judgment in our favor as the non-moving party, and the respondent didn't produce any evidence to indicate that the Nesses actually intended to exclude the roadway when they transferred it to the Thomases. That said, beyond that, in the appellee's brief, they argue that the district court should, well, the district court's decision should be affirmed because they have ownership of the roadway subject to an easement. There is no mention of an easement in the district court decision. The district court decision simply said that Mr. Smaby is the owner in fee simple absolute, despite saying that the roadway had never been vacated. Those two conclusions do not work. If the road was never vacated, he can't be the owner in fee simple absolute. Beyond that, the district court decision on our adverse possession claim says we can't adversely possess the property because it's a public roadway, again, which directly contradicts with the conclusion that Mr. Smaby is the owner in fee simple absolute. So we believe a remand is appropriate to address the adverse possession claim as well. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. You'll have 5 minutes rebuttal. Mr. Baer, if you'd state your name and the party you represent, go ahead.
Thank you very much, Zenas Baer. I represent the respondent, Terry Smaby. May it please the court. I think the issue in this case, the threshold issue in this case, is the authority of a township to vacate a roadway that is dedicated on a Chapter 505 plat. That is the threshold issue. That is the basis upon which Hansen makes a claim of title to the property. It is only based on the presumption of transfer of land based on a vacation.
The why does it help your case that the property was vacated as opposed to continuing to be?
It doesn't. I think it does not help or hurt the Smaby's case. He owns the property. The fee ownership of the property underlying the roadway. He purchased it from the platter of Ness Beach Second Edition, which was the owner of the property that is owned by Hansen now, and also the property that is owned by Smaby. He purchased it from the estate of Esther Ness, the chain of title. The record title to this property goes directly from the underlying fee owner, Esther Ness, to the to Terry Smaby. The Hansen's chain of title is circuitous and relies on a presumption that upon a road vacation, the property is adjoined to the adjacent lots. You should remember,
if the property were not vacated, if we were to conclude that, do you then have to, it's not vacated, but it's still there as a dedicated road. Do you still have the issue of the presumption then? Maybe even more strongly because the road is in fact, remains a dedicated road. And so there's a presumption that would normally follow there. Do you have to deal with that issue?
No, because
why not?
The remedy for Smaby or anybody else who is concerned about this roadway is to bring a district court action, noticing all of the owners of Ness Beach and all of the owners of Ness Beach Second Edition that there's going to be an amendment to the plat that was recorded back in the 1960s. And that is the process that would take place. And this litigation.
You mean in order to vacate the road?
Yes.
Let's assume that they didn't do that though, which I think is not an assumption. I think that didn't happen. So if the road is not vacated, which I think is your argument.
Yes.
Isn't there a presumption that arises when there's a transfer of property that vacates, or excuse me, that abuts a road or not?
No, not if the fee owner, this property is owned in fee by the Nesses, and they conveyed their interest to Smaby. and Smebby has, he's an adjoining property owner, as is the Hansen. They both adjoin the property of the vacated roadway. And so Terry Smebby has the right to use this property, subject to the public's ultimate right, if the roadway is to be constructed, to construct it in that corridor. And that is the nature of this land as it has been since the platting of the property and the Ultra Vires Act by the township to vacate this roadway. And if the court concludes that the township had the
Easily could be misunderstanding the law, but when let's assume that a property owner owns property that's on both sides of a road and sells both sides of that road. Isn't there a presumption that the property underlying the road or the dedicated road is half on one side, half goes to one owner, half goes to the other owner? Isn't there a presumption that arises so that the original grantor isn't left with a strip of land should that road disappear and be vacated?
I think the purpose of the presumption, Your Honor, is to provide access to those people who own lots on both sides of the road. If the road is vacated, then the access of the lot owners that are served by the road are diminished. And the public policy of having the roadway presumptively go to the adjoining property owners is to continue that right of access for those lots that have been developed along the roadway to be able to access their homes as they did before the public vacated the roadway and converted it then to a private roadway or drive. I believe that's the public policy behind the notion that once a road is vacated, it reverts to the adjacent property owners. And I believe that that is stated quite clearly in the White versus Jefferson decision, that the lot owners adjacent to that vacated LaSalle Street, once the street is vacated, there is no presumption at all about ownership, only before it is vacated. And in this case, it has to be remembered that the adjacent property owner to this road was not platted. It's not part of the subdivision. It's just open land. It's not in any way tied to this roadway to get access to a public thoroughfare. This is just vacant land that is adjacent to a platted road.
Can I take you to a sticking point as I see it in your argument, which is your response to the 507.17 position of the appellant. So as I understand your argument, your position is that there was an express contrary intention in the conveyance because the roadway portion wasn't included in the conveyance. But isn't that exactly what's contemplated in 507.17? Every conveyance of real estate which abuts a vacated street, not every conveyance that includes a vacated street, but which abuts. It seems to me that you want to take the language of the statute, the language that refers to an express contrary intention, and conclude that if the land is not included, the disputed property is not included in the conveyance, then that itself expresses a contrary intention. And I'm troubled by the logic of that. Do you understand my problem?
And I know that it is not a, that's why we still call it the practice of law. We are trying to parse out the provisions of 507.17. And the deed from Ness to Thomas and the Thomas deed to Hansen used the borderline of this connecting roadway, which was not part of the plat at all, as a boundary line of the vacant land that was being conveyed.
Right.
So
why doesn't that fit the statute's language? Every conveyance of real estate which abuts upon a vacated street, alley, or other public right of way shall be construed to include. You seem to be arguing that because it wasn't included, therefore that's an expression of a contrary intention. I'm not sure how this doesn't fit the exact language of the statute. Help me around my concern.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of answers to that. First, it is not a vacated street.
Well, I think there you get into maybe you can address, I don't think your brief goes into the relationship between 507.17 and the Edgerton decision of this court. And maybe you can address that as to the timing of the vacation or the intended.
You mean
vacation.
Is it the Edgewater decision?
I thought it was Edgerton. Yes, it is Edgewater, not Edgerton.
Edgewater, yeah, okay. Yeah, these cases are fact specific. The Edgewater decision is Detroit Lakes, that's in my backyard. And there were adjacent property owners that used the road in and out. And the roadway was just on one plat, not on the next plat. And so the court determined that once the roadway that is platted entirely on the platter's property does not revert to the adjacent owner. So the adjacent owner gets a benefit of that additional street. That's the Edgewater decision. I think the issue here is abuts on a vacated street. There has never been a vacation of this street under 505.14. The only basis to vacate a street on a plat is under the 505.14, which requires notice to all of the individuals who are benefited by the plat, not only the plat in which it is dedicated, but also the adjoining plat, the roadway that adjoins the two plats. So what my argument is that this is not property on a vacated street, so the presumption never arises. Then you have a deed of the fee interest owner underlying the street, conveying that interest to Smeby. Now, Smeby has that fee simple interest in that underlying property, and we'll have to wait until there is a vacation to address the issue, I think, that you are arising, and that is whether or not this vacated public thoroughfare is now divested of the record title owner of the property, who is also an adjacent property owner.
Do you agree that if a vacation occurred, if we disagree with the premise to your argument about vacation, if a vacation occurred in 1967, that then 507.17 would work to cause a presumption?
No, I think that's the White versus Jefferson, I think, is exactly contrary to that. If the vacation occurred in 1967, the conveyance to the Thomases occurred in 1976, and they specifically, by meets and bounds, drew those outlines on the border of that road, which now is vacated, so it is no longer a vacated road. So that road goes away, and there's no longer a vacated road. It is essentially a bare piece of land, like the White versus Jefferson discussion. It's like calling it a sand hole or no name at all. It reverts to just bare land that can be conveyed by the owner of the land to a third party. And I think the issue is the jurisdiction of the town board. If the town board had no jurisdiction to vacate the roadway, it still is a platted roadway, and 507 or 50, 7.17 has no play in the matter. We would request that the court affirm the district court's decision. And
can I ask, Mr. Baer, there was at the end of opposing counsel's argument, there was a question of, well, although does the district court wrongly conclude that Mr. Smaby owns it free and clear without, I guess, an easement for the town to put a road on? Is that before us? What can you speak to that, please?
Yeah, thank you. I think that's a nuance in the language itself. An easement is all that a platted street grants to the public. And an easement does not convey an estate, title, or possession, but conveys only the right of use. That's from State versus Hess, 684 Northwest 2nd 414 at 420, Minnesota 2004 decision, citing Romans versus Nadler, 14 Northwest 2nd 482.
So what you're saying, if I understand, is that whatever the district court did here, what the language the district court used did not somehow, by its language, remove the township's authority under the easement to put a road there if they choose to.
That's that right? Correct. That still maintains, that still is there. I see my time is up. Thank you very much.
Meaning I gather that, which I don't think is inconsistent with normal nomenclature in property law, one can have a fee simple interest in a property, and there still can be an easement attaching to it with some limitation.
Right.
So the term fee simple absolute that was used here doesn't exclude the notion, as Judge Smith is discussing with you, exclude the idea of an easement still continuing.
That's correct. And it was never intended. There was never any litigation about the 505 plat. That takes a whole different process, and a whole bunch of other individuals come to the table to try to determine whether or not there is any usefulness for this roadway.
Thank you, counsel. Any other questions from the panel? All right, Mr. Foss, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Baer started his argument by essentially stating that the threshold issue is whether the township had jurisdiction and authority to vacate the road. And if they did not, his client necessarily wins. That is simply not correct. Judge Smith, you asked questions along the lines of, if the vacation did not occur and the roadway is still there, wouldn't the property have been, the interest in the roadway have been implicitly included in the transfer from the Nesses to the Thomases? That's absolutely correct. That is what the White decision is all about, that if there's a property adjacent to the roadway, a transfer of that property includes any interest in the roadway unless it's explicitly excluded. The distinction is that under those circumstances, if the roadway hadn't been properly vacated, the Nesses' interest would only be in half of the roadway, whereas Mudgett, the owner on the other side of the roadway, would have an interest in half the roadway. If the roadway was vacated, as we believe, then the entire roadway went back to the Nesses as the grantors, and the entire roadway would have been transferred to the Thomases and subsequently to the Hansons. In addition, beyond that, if the roadway was not vacated, there is still—
Okay, so just to be clear on your argument, you're saying if there was no vacation, half of it goes to your clients. If there was a vacation, all of the disputed property goes to your clients by operation of a presumption that was not overcome. Is that right?
Close, Your Honor. If it was not vacated, half of the property, half of the roadway automatically went to my clients. However, the next issue I was going to mention was our claim for adverse possession. The roadway has quite clearly been abandoned since 1967 at the latest.
So getting the whole roadway as opposed to half the roadway is dependent on your succeeding in an adverse possession case.
If this court concludes that the roadway was not vacated, yes. So if the roadway was not vacated, half of the roadway should have been transferred implicitly from the Nesses to the Thomases. Thomas explicitly transferred it to Hanson. Beyond that,
Okay, but if it was vacated, I'm sorry, I might not be following you. If it was not vacated, half of it goes, you're saying, by operation of a presumption of law. if it was vacated, you seem to argue that all of it goes.
Sure.
And if your clients by operation of the presumption of law.
If I can try to finish my thought about if it was not vacated, half automatically goes under the implicit rule of White in the statute. All of it should still go under adverse possession because my clients and their predecessors adversely possessed the entire roadway. The roadway was abandoned. The public lost its interest and it's subject to adverse possession. So even if...
if it's vacated, you would depend on the adverse possession to get all of it.
If it was not vacated. If it was not vacated, there was still a roadway. At the time the Nesses transferred half of their interest to the Thomases, their interest in half the roadway would have been implicitly included in that transfer, and the same with the Thomases to the Hanson. However, that roadway has been abandoned. Cormorant Township, Becker County have undisputedly never used it. The public lost its interest. My clients and their predecessors in interest have made a claim for adverse possession of the entire roadway. And so it would be, from my possession perspective, indisputable, the half should have been included, but we've got the claim for adverse possession for the entirety, which the district court erroneously failed to conclude. That said,
help me to get around the restriction against adverse possession being applied to the interests held by a public entity.
I can look the case here through my notes quickly, Your Honor, but we cite case law that states once a public entity abandons its property, the public loses interest. If the public has lost its interest in it, it should be subject to adverse possession by private parties. And we cited a recent case from the North Dakota Supreme Court, which is persuasive authority, that looked at this direct issue of whether an abandoned roadway could be subject to adverse possession. And that court concluded, yes, once it's been abandoned, it can. All of that said, in my last 25 seconds, we do believe the correct decision from this court is to find that the Cormorant Township had the authority to vacate the township road. It did so in 1967. It did so again in 2006. Neither of those decisions were challenged. Interested parties could have appealed them at the time. Because it was vacated, the roadway implicitly went to the Thomases in the transfer from the Ness, and then explicitly to my client, the Hansons. Thank you, Your Honors, for your time.
Just one quick question, if I could follow
up.
Judge Smith agrees that I can carry you on a little bit longer.
Carry on.
Just quickly, though, I mean, your position that neither the 1967 nor the 2006 activity of the township, we'll call it, was challenged, that doesn't matter if the township lacked jurisdiction to begin with, right?
I would agree with that, Your Honor.
When I say jurisdiction or statutory authority.
Understood. And it's our position under 16407 that they did have authority because this is a road that was located entirely within the township. And that statute even specifically refers to a township's ability to vacate roads that are dedicated by plat.
Okay, I'm going to take the prerogative to ask you one more, just two, so I'm for my notes, so I can understand the line of your reasoning here. If the road was not vacated, i.e. still exists, you believe there's a presumption that half of the disputed property goes to your clients, right?
Correct. And that's under the White versus Jefferson decision. And the other half would have gone to the Mudgetts, who are Mr. Smaby's predecessors in interest.
Okay. And then that would end the analysis there. Or do you have an adverse possession argument as to their second half?
We do have an adverse possession claim to the second half. And so
Okay.
I inartfully attempted to argue that even if the township did not properly vacate, we'd still have a valid claim for ownership of the entirety.
Okay. And now if the road is vacated, if the road was vacated, you argue that the initial conveyance gave half or all of the disputed property.
If the road was vacated under section 507.17, all of the vacated road.
Because okay, I guess the entire vacated road, in that case, if the road is vacated, they get more. They get the entire vacated road by presumption.
Correct.
You don't even need adverse possession, right?
Right. When the road was vacated, the entire road implicitly went back to the Nesses as the grantors who still own the adjacent property.
And more importantly, went from them to the Thomases.
And then to the Hansons. Yes, correct, Your Honor.
Right, right. Okay. Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you both. The case is submitted. We'll have a decision out in a statutory time period. We appreciate it.